Welcome to the world of Mark's Money Mind, coming to you once again from Longmont, Colorado. I am your host, Mark Troutman. This educational personal finance show combines money lessons, timely topics, personal stories, and community wisdom to help listeners and viewers master their finances to enjoy a stress-free life of financial freedom. Well, I am back from a fun two-week trip to Alaska. And I spent some additional time in Seattle on the front end and Vancouver between two different cruises. I flew into Seattle to meet up with over 90 friends from the financial independence community. We attended the seven-day FinTalks cruise hosted by my good friend Amberly Grant, and it was a fabulous time. And after that, I headed over to Vancouver for a few days before jumping on another cruise ship back up to Alaska with a totally different itinerary, and I did that one solo. Both trips were great for their own reasons. The FinTalks cruise was just phenomenal for the community connections. And the second one, which traveled up the Inside Passage, was really spectacular for its scenery. The ship was a little smaller and more intimate, and it gave me some time to really soak in that Alaska experience fully. A side benefit of that extra trip was, and kind of the reason I decided to tack it on, was it would allow me to get to diamond status on Royal Caribbean. And more importantly, not only the benefits that come with that, but there is a status match over to their other lines, one of which is Silver Sea, which I do a number of sailings on. And that would give me the ability to have what's called Venetian Society 250, as if I had sailed 250 days on Silver Sea. And what that does is it gives me an additional 10% off future cruises, which is a big deal for Silver Sea because they're quite expensive. And I already have a number of trips planned over at Silver Sea. And Amberly is putting together a cruise on Silver Sea to Antarctica in February of 2028. So certainly that extra discount is going to come in handy for that one because that is not an inexpensive trip. And we had a number of people sign up while we were on the FinTalks cruise, because if you signed up while you're on a Royal Caribbean ship, you got an onboard discount, which is 5% on Silver Sea. That's a big deal. And I think we have 17 cabins already on that cruise. So if you're interested in that one, you might want to check out amberlygrant.com and see the information about that cruise. But that's going to be a fun, fun trip. So that second cruise, you know, the optimizer in me just couldn't resist the opportunity to go for that status match. And actually, there's a number of changes coming down the line in that kind of status matching game for Royal Caribbean. And I was unaware of it at the time, but I'm glad I took that trip because I'm going to get in just under the wire for that status match because they are changing it. So it'll be more difficult to get that status match. For today's episode, I thought I would talk about a new type of investment account that actually was part of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, the OBBA, or as I've heard it referred to as the OB3. And I kind of like that. It's like Obi-Wan Kenobi, right? The OB3 last year. Effectively, what this is, it is an individual retirement account for minor children, so children under the age of 18. And it was termed the Trump account, so I know some people might have issues with the name of it. So before you make any judgment based on the name or tune me out, just listen. I think this is quite an interesting account as long as you can get over the name if that bothers you, or maybe it's great for you. But anyway, they're called Trump accounts, but really think of them as individual retirement accounts for children, more specifically, traditional individual retirement accounts for minor children. So let's just keep politics out of this and dive into understanding what this new account is and how it could really jumpstart compounding investment for a young person. And that's what's so intriguing to me. As you know, I am a huge fan of getting kids started early with investing to harness that power of compounding. It's one of the most important lessons, at least in my opinion, that I teach in the financial literacy course that I teach to high school students. And if you want to learn more about that or hear about the compounding section of that course. You can check out part four of the Financial Literacy miniseries that I released in episode 58. And I'll put that in the show notes so you can easily jump to that if you want to hear more about that. I frequently talk about the idea of starting early by funding a Roth IRA once you have earned income from, let's say, you're a high school student from a summer job, for example. And I still think that is a great option, even better than this new account. However, this new child IRA allows contribution to the child account even before they have any earned income. And that's the drawback of the Roth IRA funding, is you have to have earned income in order to make contributions. So in many cases, a child or a young person may not have earned income until they're 14, 15, 16, 17, something like that. So they really can't get started on that Roth IRA until then. Now, when they can, I think that is a better alternative. But let's talk about this one in addition to or in conjunction with a Roth IRA. Let's dive into the details. A lot of the large custodians, such as Fidelity, Vanguard, Charles Schwab, have put out their own information with details about this new account and how it's going to work. And I will link to Fidelity's in the show notes because I think they did a really good job and I think they laid it out really well. So let's talk about what this account is, how it works, and what you need to do to open one. First, let's start off by defining what it is. And I do a quick AI search and it says Trump accounts, or child IRAs, if we want to use that term instead, are tax-deferred savings and investment accounts for children established under the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, OBBA, or OB3 in my terminology. And they function similarly to a custodial traditional IRA, allowing parents and guardians, or really anyone, to build wealth for a child's future. And so that's how it works. So let's jump into who they're for, how they work. Now, they're being launched technically on July 4th of this year. Now, you can go ahead and set one up, and we'll talk about how to do that in a little bit later. But you can't start funding them until July 4th of 2026, which is right around the corner. And there's also a little bit of an incentive for new children. Anyone born between 2025 and 2028, the government will actually add $1,000 to seed the account. Great bonus. So if you have a child that was born between 2025 or potentially to be born before the end of 2028, there's $1,000 out there that you can have jumpstart that account. So let's talk about who's eligible for the account. They're for children under the age of 18 that have a Social Security number. So you need the Social Security number in order to open the account. And like I said, there's a $1,000 seed contribution for any child born between January 1st, 2025 and December 31st, 2028. And it would be funded once the account is opened for that child. So you need to get a Social Security number for the child to open the account. Now, how do they work? So they're basically think of them as a traditional IRA, and we'll talk about how that works a little bit, and the limits on it are different than regular IRAs. First, let's talk about who can contribute. Technically, this is a custodial IRA, so a parent typically would be the custodian. I believe a grandparent potentially could be the custodian as well. I'd have to double check that, but certainly a parent can. And the account is in the child's name. It uses their Social Security number. But where the money comes from to fund the account really could be anyone, even to the extent of some employers may even be able to put money in these accounts, or charitable organizations could contribute. But you could do it for your niece and nephew. A grandparent could do it for a grandchild. A parent obviously could do it for their child. So the funding source really is immaterial, kind of like the same case for a Roth IRA. It doesn't matter where the money comes from. In the Roth IRA case, for example, the person who has the account just needs to have earned income. Not the case with this one. No earned income requirement. So how much can you put in this account? The total annual contribution limit is $5,000, less than what you can contribute to a traditional IRA or Roth IRA, but still a pretty significant amount of money that can go into this account. Think about it, for a newborn child, and you can do that every year. So that's pretty significant. We'll talk about how this could compound using an example a little bit later. But just remember, it's $5,000 per year, and the account is in the child's name, and there's a custodian of that account, typically the parent. Now, like I said, the government can seed it with $1,000 for those eligible newborns, and that does not count towards the $5,000. So that's in addition to the $5,000. But again, it's a one-time contribution. The other unique aspect of this is, and we'll have to see if employers actually do this, but an employer could fund this through an employee deduction, for example. An employer can contribute up to $2,500 per year per employee. So if you had one child, the entire $2,500 could go in that child's account. If you have multiple children, two children, it could be split, $1,250 per child, for example. And that does count towards the $5,000 annual limit. The same is for charitable organizations. They can also make contributions. I don't see anywhere what the limit would be for a charity contributing to this account, but certainly that same $5,000 limit would apply. All right, so that's on the funding side. So when can the money actually come out of this account? Think of it again really as a IRA. Very much the same rules that apply to IRAs happen with these accounts. So on January 1 of the year the beneficiary or the child turns 18, the account could transition to a standard traditional IRA. So think of it as just opening a traditional IRA and funding it early. And then it just reverts to the IRA rules, which would be any withdrawal prior to age 59 and a half would be subject to a 10% penalty unless an exception applies. Exceptions are things for like educational expenses, a first-time purchase of a home, up to $10,000, birth or adoption costs, up to $5,000, qualifying medical expenses, disability or terminal illness. Those are the exceptions. But that's just to the penalty, not to taxes. So the way this works is that the contributions, that amount, when they come out, will not be taxed. But it's not like a Roth IRA where you can take the contributions out at any time. They're still going to be subject to the 10% penalty unless an exception applies, but they won't be taxed. What will be taxed is any growth in the account, very much like your regular traditional IRA. So what happens when the child turns 18? Well, you can keep the account according to current rules as a Trump account, and it will be separate and distinct from other IRAs that that person may have in the future. Now, why is that important? Well, if you're going to do conversions, there's something called the pro rata rule. I'm not going into the details here, but the Trump account is not lumped in with other traditional IRA assets when it comes to rolling over or converting the account or making a distribution from a tax standpoint. And we will talk a little bit about Roth conversions because I think this is where these accounts could be really, really interesting. But let's just continue a little bit here and understand what you can invest in this new account. So it is limited to mutual funds or ETFs that track the S&P 500, for example, or other ETFs or mutual funds with at least 90% of the assets invested in U.S. companies. So I would presume that might include things like a total U.S. stock market index fund, for example. Those funds cannot use any leverage. Index funds don't use leverage, so that would be fine. And the expense ratio cannot exceed 0.10% or 10 basis points, which I think is an exceptional rule because it's going to make sure that these accounts are invested in low-cost index funds is my guess, is what's typically going to happen, because most managed funds are not going to have expense ratios below 10 basis points. So I think these are great rules. Basically, it's probably going to be something like an S&P 500 fund or a total market index fund, which would include U.S. stocks outside the S&P 500. But again, U.S. stocks, and 90% of them will be in U.S. companies. So I think that's great. I think the rules there are fine. I have no issues with that. Let's quickly talk about how these accounts are opened, and then let's talk a little bit about the advantages that this account could have for a young person. So how do you open this account? Unfortunately, you can't just go to Vanguard or Fidelity or Charles Schwab and open one of these accounts. You need to do it through the IRS. And they've made it fairly simple and straightforward to do. You're basically going to be filling out Form 4547, and I will link that in the show notes, and it's on the IRS website. Or you can use an online tool at trumpaccounts.gov. And basically, there's a little button that you can click, and you can fill it out online. And all you're doing is you're creating the account. And my understanding is that, from additional research I've done, is that the initial custodian is Bank of New York. So that is effectively where the account is held. And you can invest through an app. And that's how it's initially done. But then, looking at the Fidelity website and the Vanguard website and Charles Schwab, it looks like once the account is actually created, it could be moved to one of those other custodians. And then it would just be like any other account you might have at one of those custodians. So some people may just leave it in the Trump account wrapper. Or if it were me, I'd probably just go ahead and move it over to a custodian that I'm already using. And then I can have it all in one place. And I think that's going to be a lot easier. And I think that's why the big custodians, Fidelity, Charles Schwab, and Vanguard, have put out this information, because they're anticipating a number of people are just going to open them up the way they have to through the IRS and then move them over to their preferred custodian. So a little bit extra effort to open the account, but it shouldn't be too hard. And that also gives you the ability to elect whether the child is eligible for the $1,000 seed contribution. And it's right there on the form. I've looked at the form, and if you click on the link in the show notes, you can see it's a very simple form. Name, address, who's the custodian, the parent, for example, what is the social security number of the child, and is the child eligible for the $1,000 seed money? Sign it, date it, done. Pretty simple. All right, so why even think about this account? Is it really worth the effort? Well, certainly don't look a gift horse in the mouth if someone's going to give you $1,000 that can compound for a long period of time, right? So that's an easy one. But even if the child is not eligible for the $1,000, is this worth it? So I kind of look at this as an alternative to other investment accounts that you could set up for a child. For example, you could just open a standard brokerage account, custodial brokerage account. I've done that before. I did that for my nieces and nephews. It was kind of like this little project I did where I funded it with some very small money for them and did it over, in most cases, 18 years. I had to start later for some of the older ones because I didn't think about it when they were born. But it was just a way to show them how compounding works over time and how it can be beneficial. So that's one option. You can just open a regular custodial brokerage account and seed it that way. Another option is to open a 529 account. And those are great for funding education purposes, college, even in some cases, private high schools and things of that nature, or trade schools. Those are great for that purpose. This one, I like to really just think of as a retirement account. So that would fall into the bucket of your Roth IRA for someone who has earned income. So that might be that teenager, or one that doesn't have earned income. This account makes logical sense. And I think you need to think of it as just jumpstarting their retirement account portion of their financial journey. 529, great for education. Roth, exceptionally good if you have earned income. And this account, if you don't have earned income and want to get that ball rolling as soon as possible. So let's talk about what could this be? What could this work out to? I always like to do compounding projections just to see. what would things look like if we made an investment and had a hypothetical rate of return? So I'm going to use a 7% rate of return. This is not any prediction in any way, shape, or form. I do need to use some kind of number if I'm going to do compounding, right? So I'm just going to use 7%. That's also the number that Fidelity uses in their example, but I've run my own numbers and it's quite interesting. So let's say you have a newborn child and you put $5,000 in this account, and I'm going to exclude the seed money for now. Let's just say it's $5,000 at the age of birth and you do it for 18 years and it compounds at 7%. Well, that's $90,000 of contributions over the 18 years. So nothing to sneeze at. It's a pretty decent amount of money. It compounds after 18 years to $181,895. Pretty significant. Think about that. If you had that when you were 18 and then compounded from there, in my financial literacy series, for example, I just use an example of someone contributing to their Roth IRA starting at 21. Well, this is 3 years before that even, and then that compounds as a basis. That's just could be phenomenal. Now, of course, everyone's not going to be able to contribute $5,000 each and every year. Maybe a grandparent could do it for a child. Collectively, the family unit, friends, whatever, could get to that $5,000. But this is what it could work out to. Now, if you had the seed money of $1,000 and added that, and I'm just doing a quick calculation here in my little HP calculator, and that would give you, instead of $181,895, it gives you $185,275. So that extra $1,000 seed money basically turns out to be an extra $4,000. So definitely worth grabbing if your child is eligible to get it, for sure. And the form itself would just ask you that information and you would get it. So no big deal. It would be included. So anyway, that's what it can do. So let's fast forward. This child is now 18. Now what? Okay. They've got, let's just say, hypothetically, $180,000 in this account. Crazy to think of, right? $90,000 in contributions, $180,000 in the account. I'm rounding just to make math easy. What now? Well, you could leave it. You could convert it to a traditional IRA. But what's going to happen is that account theoretically is going to continue to compound. And down the road, maybe when they're in their 59 and a half or later, they take the money out and pay the tax on all that growth that occurred in that account after age 18. That could be pretty significant. Let me pause here and run the numbers. Okay, so I've run the numbers from age 18 to age 60. I know this is crazy, but I just think this is just nuts when you look at compounding tables, and I love doing that. So what I did was I said, let's say at age 18, it's $180,000 in the account. And let's grow that at that same 7% per year. And let's not add anything to it. Let's just go with that. So $0 added after age 18. Well, that's a 42-year time period, and it compounds to $3,085,966. Wow. That is incredible. So now, because only $90,000 of that is basis, which means that it was contributions that did not get a tax deduction and are not taxable when they come out, all but $90,000, which is pretty much $3 million, is going to be taxed. Great problem to have, but something to consider. So what else could we do with this? Well, what you could do is, let's say this account, now $180,000 at age 18, you could consider converting it to a Roth IRA. So how would that work? There's a couple things that you need to be aware of if you're going to do it when the child is 18 and still considered a dependent of the parent. There's something called the kiddie tax. I'm not going to get too deep into what that is, but basically think of it as this. If a child has investment income that exceeds a certain amount, I think it's around $1,300 these days, it will be taxed at the parent's tax rate. So how do you get around this? Well, if they're 18 and not a dependent of the parent, that's not a problem. Typically, let's say a child went to college, they're going to be a dependent of the parent as long as they're in college. However, once that child reaches 24, they're no longer a dependent. So what you could do is say, well, I'm just going to let this account grow between age 18 and 24. And then at age 24, I'm going to start doing conversions. And what happens at the age of 24? Typically, you're in lower tax brackets because you're just starting out in your working years and you're probably in the lower end of the tax brackets. That would be a great opportunity to do conversions. Now, you may have to do it over a couple of years because when you convert that money, the original $90,000 in this example that was contributions won't be taxed, but all of the growth will be. So you would want to manage it so that you're not pushing yourself into very high brackets by doing the conversion, let's say, all in 1 year. But it could be converted over a pretty short period of time, and then all of that future growth would be tax-free. So let's take a step back, and I want to think about how I would do this if I had a child under the age of 18. Here's what I would do. This is not advice in any way, and certainly not investment advice, because we're not even talking about investments. We're just talking about the possibility of compounding, right? And I'll actually go back and think about what I did and how I would do it differently given this situation. So when my daughter was born, we actually contributed to a custodial brokerage account. And then when we learned about 529s, we switched over and did 529s. And ultimately, that effectively paid for her college. And then she still had money left over with these custodial brokerage account. Now, what I might do going forward, if I was today in that situation, I might use this account, this child IRA, aka Trump account, to fund their future retirement to some degree. Now, would I do all of the contributions I was going to put aside for this child into this account? I don't know, but I certainly would do some contributions into this account, probably in conjunction with investing in a 529 account for education purposes. And then this account could grow. And the interesting thing, and I didn't say this when I was thinking about the conversions, is that if the money is left in this child IRA and continues to grow beyond age 18, any money that's taken out of that account is going to be subject to the 10% penalty plus tax on the growth, unless any of those exemptions are met. First time home, $10,000, education, things like that. But in most cases, that's not going to be the case. However, if the child did a conversion, that five-year clock, the one of the two five-year clocks, I'm not going to get into those, but the five-year clock for conversions would start. So therefore, after 5 years, you could technically take a withdrawal of that converted money that's has aged for 5 years without penalty. So there is a way to actually get to that money earlier than age 59 and a half if you're doing conversions. But going back to the plan, what would I do? I guess it all depends on how much I was contributing to the child in total. But if I could, I certainly would try to put as much money as I could in this account, as well as the 529, kind of balancing the two out, thinking about the 529 as how much money do I need to put into that account to meet the goals of funding education, and then this account more for the purpose of jumpstarting their retirement accounts. And I just think it's a very interesting arrow in the quiver of investing, especially for young people. I think you might be able to convince some grandparents who are looking to, you know, we talk about giving with a warm hand. This could be an example of having a grandparent jumpstart the financial independence of a young individual by contributing to this account. Because again, it doesn't have to be from the parent. It can be from pretty much anyone. And I think it's just a really interesting addition to the different types of investment accounts that are out there. And like I said, I've always been a huge fan of starting Roth IRAs as soon as you have earned income. And I still think that is better than this account if a child, for example, has earned income. However, in the absence of earned income, I think this is an excellent option to take a look at. So let's summarize real quick what we have here. So what are the features of these new child IRA accounts called Trump accounts? Well, tax-deferred growth, for sure, starting at a very young age. No earned income requirement for contributions. I think that's the big critical factor in this one that none of the other accounts have. Of course, you could open a brokerage account for a child without earned income, so that is an alternative. There's $1,000 seed money available to eligible newborns born in the years 2025, 26, 27, 28. The investments are low-cost index funds, most likely, and the funding sources are pretty flexible. There are no withdrawals before the age of 18, so that is something to consider. We didn't talk about that, but that is the case. The cap is $5,000 per child. And the distribution will be taxed at the income tax rate of the child, unless, of course, the kiddie tax applies that we talked about. And employers can potentially help fund this through payroll deduction. We'll see if employers actually do that. So that's kind of the gist of these accounts. I think they're very interesting. I certainly think it's worthwhile opening one, even if you just go ahead and seed it with a small amount of money, get that form filled out. Certainly seed it with $1,000 if the child is eligible. Even if not, maybe just get the account open, put something in it so that it's kind of a place marker, and then you can use it as you see fit going forward. But I think it's a really interesting new account type, and I like to think of it as a child traditional individual retirement account, IRA, child IRA. So hopefully that was helpful. And we'll see how these roll out. They're going to be quite interesting, especially 18 years from now. There might be a number of very well-off 18-year-olds in our future if these are utilized to their fullest extent. I hope you enjoyed this. I hope you're having a great summer. It's super hot here in Longmont. We do have a pool in my neighborhood, so I think I'm going to have to go use that. I haven't done that yet, but it looks very inviting on my dog walks. And my dog is quite old. And whenever it's really hot out, half the time he'll walk outside and turn around because he doesn't want to go for a walk. Sometimes I feel the same way. I hope you're having an awesome start of the summer. And we'll see you next time on the Mark's Money Mind Show. Thank you for listening to this week's show. Please click follow on your favorite podcast player or subscribe on YouTube to ensure you don't miss any future episodes. Also, please leave a rating and review for the show. This helps improve the ranking and enables other like-minded people find the content in their podcast players. I would also appreciate it if you would recommend this show to friends and family that might benefit from this content. See you next time on the Mark's Money Mind Show. Until then, make some. Save and invest. Live on the rest. Now for the all-important disclaimer. This show is for education and entertainment purposes only and should not be considered investment, tax, or legal advice. Please consult the appropriate advisor or advisors before implementing anything you hear on this show or any other show for that matter. While I fully intend for everything on this show to be true and accurate at the time of each recording, occasionally, errors may occur, so please do your own due diligence on anything discussed.